Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of the Big Red Bus as we take the glorious monstrosity out onto the rainy streets of Chicago. I'm C-Red Fred, and I look to my right, and lo and behold, it's a great one. Doug Tonis, how you doing, brother?
I'm living the dream, Fred. That was a good intro. My ears are bleeding. I, for whatever reason, wasn't prepared for the Big Red Bus to come in that loudly after that had lost to Atlanta last night. I thought maybe it'd be a little bit more subdued, but I see you're excited still.
Well, you know what, Doug? I'm, in general in life, I would say a positive guy. I like to look on the glass fill part instead of the glass empty part. And although these bulls have really, you know, destroyed my faith in humanity at times, I'm coming back today and I'm going to say, you know what? We're going to end strong because that's what these bulls do. Just when you think they're out, when they're done, they pull us back in. And I'm going to say it right now. 6 games left in the season. I bet you they win 4 of them. What say you?
Yeah, possibly. I mean, like, I in some ways, they clinched the play-in berth. So we're really fighting for that home court advantage in the first game, which, you know, I think is meaningful to have a home game in a play-in versus be on the road, to the extent you view the play-in as meaningful at all. But, it, you know, it gives you a better chance to win, right? You know, home court is 3 points in Vegas, so you want the home court advantage if you can get it. Even though we lost to Atlanta last night, we still do own the tiebreaker, and we're still presently a half game ahead of them. So we just got to beat them the rest of the way down the stretch. And, you know, looking at the schedule, we got 2 against the Knicks, both at home. We got Orlando on the road. We got Detroit on the road, the Wizards on the road, and then the Knicks on the road. So we're going to see the Knicks a whole lot in the next 6 games. I think 4 wins is going to be tough. I'm going to give us 3 wins.
Atlanta, to me, I was saying, well, man, I don't feel great about holding on to that 9 spot. And then I look at Atlanta's schedule. Are you ready for this? Their remaining 6? At the Mavericks, at the Nuggets, the Heat at home, the Hornets at home, at Timberwolves, at the Pacers. You know, you really feel good if you're the Atlanta Hawks about one of those games, which is the Hornets at home. Everything else is going to be a challenge. What say
you?
Yeah,
it kind of depends. Maybe that last game against the Pacers, without trying to dig too deep on it. If the Pacers aren't playing for anything in that game, you know, that might be a rest game for them. Yeah, you know, at the same time, it's very possible they could be, you know, they're still pretty close to Orlando. That game could have meaning for them. They're not that far off of Miami either. So that game could have seeding implications for them. You know, the best case scenario for the Bulls in that last game is that Miami and Indy are fighting for the 6-7 spot. And then, like, you clearly really want to win that if you're Indy to get the 6th spot, because then you're not in the play-in tournament. So that would be, you know, probably the best scenario for the Bulls. But yeah, I mean, even without that Indy game, you know, we've got Washington and Detroit on the schedule. So we've got more games you just figure you could bank in as wins than Atlanta, who only has Charlotte. Same time, we've lost 3 total games to Detroit and Washington. So nothing with the Bulls can be guaranteed. Is you know, like, they've beaten some really good teams. They've lost to some really bad teams. And, you know, what we've seen recently is it just comes down to the 3-point shooting every game. You know, the games that they have, like, wild swings where, like, they lose to Detroit, it was like, yeah, we shot like 10% or 5% or something from the 3-point line that game, and Detroit shot, you know, crazy good. So, you know, a lot of games that even though the Bulls generally shoot less threes than other teams, they shoot them at around the same percentage. The games that go crazy are the ones where the percentages swing all weird and, you know, someone just kills it from 3. I know people want to talk about, Adam Amin said this on the broadcast yesterday, and I just wanted to, and I love Adam Amin, but I want to smack him for the bad math. He's like, it's like starting with a 9-point deficit because the other team shoots 3 more threes, or makes 3 more threes a game than the Bulls do. And I'm like, well, no, because they also shoot like 6 more threes or 7 more threes or whatever it is than the Bulls do. So yeah, they make 3 more, but it's like the value of all those shot attempts, you know, it's like it's only like really like a 0.5 point or something that really makes a difference. It's not 9 points, because you make 3 less if you take, you know, like 8 shots to get there or whatever it is. I think it's like not quite as bad as people think. But the 3-point shooting creates these crazy variations. You know, when you look at a team like, you know, Atlanta, when they when they shoot really well against us, like last night, they're shooting nearly 48%, and then they also get 43s up. You know, it's not so much that they made more threes than us. It's that they shot 48% from the three-point line. That's the problem. And we're not giving up 48% from the three-point line on a regular basis. We're giving up 36.7%. So, you know, it's that variation in the percentages that causes the crazy outcomes, not just the raw numbers.
Well, the Bulls, as of late, have not played well. I know we've had the miracle win in Minnesota. We had the miracle win against the Pacers. But if you go back to March 21st, we lost at Houston. We lost to the Celtics at home. We lost to the Wizards at home. Then we beat the Pacers. We lost at Brooklyn, which was a horrible loss. Then we beat the Timberwolves. And then last night, you know, we lose to the Hawks. To finish the season, we got the Knicks twice at home, on the road once, and then the Wizards, Pistons, and Magic. You can't take any of these games for granted. You're right. This is a team that surprises you with wins against the Timberwolves, sweeping the season series, but they can lose to anybody. And I fully expect them to lose one of those two games to either the Pistons or Wizards. So part of the reason is, why is this team so inconsistent? Why are they so wildly inconsistent? A lot has to do, to me, with just the structure and the personnel on the team. That's what this team is wildly inconsistent. But I do want to get one area they've been pretty consistent is an inability to guard a three-point line. Why is that? Why do you think, in your opinion, do the Bulls suck so bad at guarding the three-point line?
I want to get back to maybe your first question, and then I'll answer your second one if that's okay. I think people expect more consistency than really exists. Like, so if you look at the Bulls, like, net rating, they're like a negative 1.7 on the year. Like, that's not a team that's really good, right? Like, so we're not a very good team. Like, we just aren't. We're not like a terrible team. We're like at the low end of average. And so, like, we've won a ton of clutch games. Like, our actual expected win-loss total by net rating is even worse than our actual total. It's 34 and 42. So
how much
we're
worse?
Just not a very
just
good
really
team.
Quick.
Two games. Two games.
Hammer
two
that
games
point home.
34 and 42 versus 36 and 40.
So we won two more games than expected. Okay.
Yeah. So, like, you know, like, you're, and there's going to just be variance. And in the modern NBA, there's more variance than there was in the past because the 3-point shooting creates just huge variance, right? When there's so many threes, like, you have a good 3-point shooting night, you can beat anyone. You have a really bad night, you can lose to anyone. And then if you have your just typical night and the other team has their typical night, maybe it comes down to the other things. And so there's just a lot more variance than people expect. So you lose games that, you know, you're favorite in. You win games that you're underdogs in. Yeah, but the overall quality of the team is a team that's probably like upper 30s in wins. And that's where we are. Like, all of that balances out kind of at the end of the year. And so I don't think, like, any of that should be as surprising as it is to people. You know, a team that is just consistently really good, like the Celtics, like, you have this really tremendous net rating. You win your average game by 11.6 points. It's their net rating. They're plus 11.6. Like, yeah, that team can survive poor shooting, right, because they have other things going on. And then they still have their share of good shooting games. They can still lose to anyone on a night where they have a bad shooting game and the other team has a good shooting game. You know, but, like, if except in that scenario, they're probably going to win most of the time. You know, the Bulls are a team that's going to not win most of the time unless they kind of, you know, have something go in their direction. It's just going to be a lot of toss-ups. And so, you know, you can just lose anyone. So I think maybe my first point is that, like, there's more variance than people think there should be. And that's just across the league. There's just more variance than you should be. So your second point, why do they not defend the three-point line? I think this is not going to come as a big surprise coming from me, but it really comes down to Vucevic, and, you know, maybe to a lesser extent Drummond. And maybe to a lesser extent, we don't have a good shot blocking power forward. If you can't defend the paint, you have to have your guards crash into the paint, and then you're just going to give up three-point shots. You give up something, you're not going to give up layups, right? So three is like the next thing that teams go for, and if you are helping a lot in the paint, then you're going to give up threes. That's just the notion of it. You know, so I think that's all that really comes down to. I'm not really sure, though, to be honest. Like, I don't know if the Bulls are that bad at defending the three-point line. I mean, they're the league average. The league average from the 3-point line is 36.6% shooting from three. The Bulls are giving up, I think, around that exact percentage, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, just looked it up now, 36.8%. So we're effectively, from a percentage basis, giving up the league average number of threes, our percentage. So it's not like we're just like teams are shooting 45% against us. I think it probably feels like it's worse for us because we shoot so few threes ourselves. So that variance feels like much worse, right? Like it feels like we, you know, like it feels like we give up so many more threes than because we don't make as many and we don't take as many. Like we're at 33.1 threes per 100 possessions. I kind of like the per possession numbers. And we give up 40.8. So on average, per 100 possessions, a team is shooting seven more threes than we are. And, you know, that's a problem. And we knew it was a problem when the season started. I mean, I think they tried to address that problem in the offseason with Torrey Craig and with Javon Carter. And, like, that didn't work well. Craig hasn't been amazing, and he's been hurt a lot. And Carter just played really, really poorly. And you know, Patrick Williams is now out. And Zach LaVine is now out. Like, Zach LaVine was our best three-point shooter in terms of volume and maybe just on the team. And, you know, so that's hard. Like, you lost key guys who were going to put up a lot of those attempts, and then a couple guys that were probably about as best as you could think of as guys to bring in with the money we had, you know, didn't really work out. And, you know, like, Iowa's picked up a little slack, and Kobe's picked up a little slack. But it's hard, you know, with the guys we've lost to be able to make that up, right? And then, you know, Vucevic is obviously, I mean, I've been harping on it for a long time, but, like, he's obviously not been a good shooter this year. And whether the team expected that out of him, it seems like they do because they keep putting him in position to shoot threes. But, you know, that hasn't panned out. And so, you know, I think they did make a reasonable attempt to be able to get more threes up. And, you know, between all the injuries and the free agents who then weren't able to replicate their seasons from the last year, it's just been a continued problem.
I'm going to name three teams: the Minnesota Timberwolves, the Boston Celtics, the Oklahoma City Thunder. Those are 1, 2, and 3 in the league in a defensive statistic. Do you know what that stat is?
There's a 1, 2, 3 in the league. Well, because we're talking about it, I'm going to guess in like 3-point shooting defense.
No. It's guarding. It's guarding the rim. Those okay. Three teams are the best in terms of defensive field goal percentage at the rim. They're 1, 2, 3. Makes a lot of sense, right? Timberwolves with, you know, Gobert. Arguably the best rim defender in the league. Boston Celtics, excellent defenders, especially at the rim too. You know, Porzingis is an excellent rim. Not excellent, but he's good.
He's been very good. He's been very good. He's very tall, and they have great perimeter defenders who are long too. So yes. Know, their perimeter guys can help stop penetration and can hold their own, don't require a lot of double teams. So, yeah.
Yeah, and then Chet with Oklahoma City has been a revelation. Excellent rim defender. Big
who
guy.
Saw that one coming? I didn't see.
I
got to see Chet coming. I
got
to be honest with you.
You can look through my Twitter feeds. Chet has always been one of my favorites. I always loved him, and I knew that was coming. So he is an excellent player.
I just thought that dude weighed like 140 pounds. I did some talking about him. Like, people were like making fun of him for being too skinny and saying this was unfair. And I'm like, people made fun of Kevin Durant for being too skinny. Like,
yeah, he couldn't even bench.
And Chet Holmgren was like an inch or 2 inches taller and like 25 pounds lighter than Kevin Durant as a rookie. Like, how skinny this guy was is insane compared to any other metric. And he's had a great year. Like, the skill was all there. I just thought there's no way this guy's body is going to hold up. And yeah, I hope it does. Like, it's really exciting. It's like maybe a side rant from where you're going, not rant, but side path, side street, the bus is going to go down. What a revelation in the NBA for centers. Like, centers were dead not that long ago. And right. Now it's like between Wemby and Chet and Jokic and Embiid, like, centers are really kind of back, making a pretty big difference in the league again.
Absolutely true. But I did want to finish this point. The two worst teams in the league at defending the rim, the Charlotte Hornets and Portland Trailblazers, are the worst in the league, believe it or not, which is kind of surprising. The Bulls are seventh worst in the league at defending the rim. So despite all their efforts to protect the paint, despite all the great perimeter defenders that the Bulls have, and they have several, really one, and Caruso's elite perimeter defender, but you have a bunch of good ones, I think. Io at this point should be considered a good perimeter defender. Craig is pretty good. They have some good perimeter defenders. Williams, when he was healthy. They're seventh worst in the league. You got the Blazers, the Hornets, the Heat, believe it or not, are in there. The Wizards, the Hawks, the Raptors, and Bulls. Those bottom seven teams, there's going to be one. The Bulls and Hawks are going to be in the play-in and out in the first round. The Heat is the only team that you could probably make an argument it's going to get to the second round. Protecting the rim is very, very important. The Nuggets are top 10. The Bucks are top 10. The Knicks are top 10. Cavaliers are top 10. The only team that's not top 10 that's going to be in the outside the playoffs is the Memphis Grizzlies, because they have JJJ, who's fantastic at protecting the rim. So we've ignored this for 3 years. You know, ever since this front office took over, they sent out all of our rim defenders, and we brought in, Vooch, who's one of the worst in the league. We can't even, despite all those efforts, defend the three-point line. You got to do one or the other. We do neither. This needs to be addressed this offseason. Doug, what can we do to address the lack of rim defense?
Nothing.
What about drafting?
I mean, nothing. This team is screwed this offseason. Like, if you're looking for me for answers for next year, the answer is start playing for 2 years from now.
So you're saying Vucevic is untradeable?
No, you could trade him. Then what?
For what?
All right, you're gonna get negative assets back, so you can get him off your roster, and that's probably a move you do if you're playing for 2 years from now. I just think it's gonna be really hard to do much with this team, and I think they're going to aim to bring back DeMar, you would think, right? You agree with that?
Yes, I think they'll probably bring him back.
You're going to bring back Pat Williams, right? Yeah, okay. Yeah. But yeah. You're going to bring back Pat Williams, right?
Yeah, unfortunately, yes.
Okay, what else are you going to do then?
You got a draft pick.
It'll be a miracle if you bring those two guys back and you avoid the tax without some other salary dump move. We know they're not going to pay the tax. So you're going to have no room. You're not going to be able to use the mid-level exception. Yeah, maybe you could draft a rim defender if there's one in our range. But like, drafting on need is always a really dicey proposition, and expecting a rookie to come in and defend the rim is also a dicey proposition. So I just think it's just going to be, it's really tough. They're going to need someone like Julian Phillips to step up and be really huge next year, which is a second rounder. I mean, we've seen Io do that, but that's a stretch to think that could happen. Maybe Pat Williams is going to come back after this injury that I'm just going to throw it out there. Was the Lonzo Ball injury, except in the foot. There's real risk there, and who knows what he's going to look like. But maybe if best case scenario, he comes back on fire, and but there's problems with Pat, right? It's not like this guy has ever been someone you're wow, what a guy who moves around so much and defends the rim and, has really quick, great instincts to get in front of guys. It's not really his strength. So it's just going to be really hard. And I don't know, maybe you can get a rim defender at the minimum. How good are the rim defenders at the minimum? I don't think really great, right? It's just going to be tough for this team to do anything and to try to bring back DeMar and Pat. And it's going to be really painful if they don't bring those guys back, which is why I said to me, ultimately, I said this a couple of years ago, and I've been hammering on this for a long time, this team isn't going anywhere. You've got to shake this up, and the longer you wait, the more painful it's going to be. I gave you a plan, I think it was a year and a half ago or so, where we could trade Zach, DeMar, Vooch, and Caruso and probably get around 15 draft picks, 7, 8 in the first round. And then you would go with Pat, Io, and Kobe, and you'd probably be bad for a couple of years, and you just see what all those draft picks yielded and what those guys yielded. How much happier would you be right now if we had enacted my plan from 2 years ago?
Or they could have just not re-signed Vooch or tried to trade him in the last year of his contract. I mean, that's where it all starts
too.
And ends
you
for
didn't,
me.
Yeah, you didn't have to do all of it. I agree. There's steps in between, But the thing is, it was every time you don't do this, you're fighting to be good now. it becomes one of these things like, well, if we don't keep Vooch, we can't replace him with someone. And, you know, like whatever. And it's the same thing with DeMar now. Like, if we let DeMar go, the team's just going to be worse. But, like, you're probably going to sign DeMar to a bad contract now. And so when you're kind of always in this, like, half, you know, one foot in the water and one foot out, and you don't want to jump all the way into the pool, like, you know, that's just the problem. Like, you just need to make a decision. Or I guess you don't. Or you just keep playing for ninth place. And that just seems to be what we're going to do.
I just can't tell you how many times we've played a center, Hartenstein, all these guys that make less money, significantly less than Vooch, I think are better options for the Bulls because they're better on the defensive end. They don't need the ball and start pouting. I mean, last night to me was the epitome of, you know, I know there's a ton of Vooch defenders out there, and he does some things well. He's a decent defensive rebounder. He's a good passer for a center. All the stuff we've talked about ad nauseum. He goes 2 for 7 last night, 5 points in the game, absolutely getting run up and down the court by Capella, like just the whole game. He can't keep up. You got to play at a slow pace with him. You're limited defensively on what you can do because he can't double. He can't switch. Teams are hunting for him in switches now. Their whole goal is to get, you know, get a pick where you got a big on a guard. It's such an embarrassment. Like, at this point now, there's people still defending it. I'm like, there's no defending this. This guy is not good. He's not a good player. He's not an efficient offensive player. Why is this conversation still being had? Because we signed him for another additional 2 years after this year. That's not a reason to admit your mistake. Let's go on. Let's figure this out. Let's get him off this roster this year. You know, one of the things I suggested is I think there's going to be a team. You talked about the resurgence of centers, and you're right, Doug. But you look at, like, Oklahoma City. Oklahoma City loses to every team with a big center. They don't have enough power or enough weight in that center position, you know, to beat Denver or any other team with a big center. They just, you know, they're going to beat Chet there. Try to look at a team like that as an option. Try to sell it on that if you can. I know it's going to be hard because of that extra year, that stupid extra year that we didn't need to give them. But I'm hoping that that's a team that has a unfortunate exit, whether it's the Lakers, whether it's a team like, I don't know, OKC or the Knicks, one of those teams, whatever it is, loses disappointing in the first round and they make that mistake and try to bring him in due to his name and his limited talent on the offensive end. Am I just no. Pipe dream here? Is this out of the realm
pipe
of possibility?
Dream. Come on, dude. There's no way the Thunder are going to bring in Vooch. They have like the best general manager in the league. You think you're going to fool him? Come on.
I could have made the argument if they were signed for one more year.
Find a different team. It's not going to be the Thunder. I mean, like, I don't know. I'm not saying it's I can't see anyone taking Vooch without getting paid to do it.
Yeah.
Like, it's just hard. Like, I mean, he shot terrible from three. You know, I posted stats like he's like the least efficient. I mean, like, some of these stats are amazing when you like the stuff I posted throughout the season. Like, who is the least efficient role man in the NBA as a center? Vucevic. Who also has twice as many role attempts as any other center in the league? Vucevic. Who's having one of the worst three-point shooting seasons in the history of the league? Vucevic. Yet, you know, like, who's one of the least efficient post scorers in the NBA? Vucevic. Like, every time this guy takes a shot, it's, like, bad for you. Like, people are like, well, he puts up points. I'm like, yeah. I'm like, really, really lousy efficiency. Like, centers are usually like 65% true shooting guys. And Vooch is 53.6%. He's 54.4% for his career. Like, he's below the league average for his career at a position that's like 10% above the league average.
Because he doesn't get to the free throw line.
He doesn't shoot threes. Like, not efficiently. Like, he shoots them, but not well. And whatever. And now he's like, he's old and he's slow. And you also, the other hidden penalty is what teams have found is the faster you take a shot, the more efficient the shot is. So if you're running up and down the court and you go quickly before the opposing defense is set and you get them in what's called early offense, not necessarily transition, not saying you're getting a layup, but you get to early offense where like everyone is not set and they're not all matched up on the guy they want to get matched up on or whatever else. you get much better shots. And so teams, that's one of the reasons why pace is up so much and why scoring is up so much. That and three-point shooting are like the entire reason. And you can't do that with Vooch as your center because he's slow. And then when you want to try to get him looks, you slow down the offense so much. And now you're playing with like, you know, 10 seconds on the shot clock by the time you set the play up. And now you got to make something happen in 10 seconds. Even if that early offense doesn't yield something, by trying to get a good shot for, say, 18 seconds of the shot clock, because you're actually looking for your shot within the first 6 seconds, you know, like 18, maybe even 20 seconds if you get the ball across in 4 seconds, you know, you just have twice as much time to find a good shot than if you try and be like, all right, let's walk the ball up. Let's set up a play in the post. Like, if that play doesn't yield something, you're now in a desperation shot right away. And so he, you know, even regardless of the shots he doesn't shoot, just trying to get him an attempt lowers your offensive efficiency a lot because you've wasted so much time in doing it. And so it's just a guy who just does not fit in the league anymore. And we're stuck with him for 2 years. So that just is what it is. Like, it's a bad decision, you know, and we're going to make the same decision on DeMar this year. And like, I think DeMar has been fantastic on the contract he's on, but I don't want him on his next deal. Maybe if we could get it on a 2-year deal, but like, I think I met with DeMar, like I'd offer $250, like $25 million a year. And if he doesn't take it, just let him go. Like, I just don't know what else you're going to do. Like, you know, again, I know our team isn't going to do this, but sacrifice next year, start looking ahead. You know, like, it's just, you can't just, I don't know how you could go forward with this team for the fourth year in a row. And that just seems to be lined up to what we're going to do.
Well, I don't think they have many choices. Like, another issue.
You have the choice to let people go. Like, trade everyone and, like, yeah, you're going to be bad for a year, but then, oh, well, then now rebuild something. But you can't just, like, what are you just going to run it back forever? Like, you eventually have to do something else.
I think the Bulls organization will make the decision that they'd rather be in this middling than back to a full rebuild where they let DeMar DeRozan walk. Like, just let DeMar walk and you're going to be a lottery team. And not only a lottery team, but a pretty bad
one. You're going to be a lottery team this year. You were a lottery team last year.
Yeah, good points. But there's a difference between being 9 and 10 than being picking 1, 2, 3, Doug. Right? Right? I mean, maybe yeah, next year is the year to pick 1, 2, 3.
With the Bulls luck.
With the Bulls luck, we have Kobe White under contract. We have talent under contract. Like, we'll probably be 11. And we'll hand that number one pick over to San Antonio because we owe them that. It's top 10 protected.
Well, it's I think it's what, like top 11? I've spent a while since I've looked. I think it's like top 10 or 11 protected. And then I want to say it goes down to top 8 protected. Or maybe it starts at top 8 and then it goes down. I think it starts at like top 10 protected, maybe. Like 11 was the worst we could give up. And then the protection declines. But it never declines where they could get the number one pick. It'll like turn into one of those second rounders before then. So, but yeah, I don't know. Like, they have delayed all of the hard choices for so long that the hard choices are now even harder. Like, you didn't, if you enacted the plan I gave you, you know, you didn't have to be in this boat at all. And, you know, really, it's like people will probably bag on both of us now, but me especially, for being so hard on Vooch. If you could just erase everything related to Vooch from what this front office has done, the rest of the stuff really isn't that bad. Like, the rest of the stuff would be, like, kind of okay-ish. Like, you got unlucky with Lonzo, so that turned out really bad. But, like, I don't think you blame him a little
Dale
bit because Lonzo was...
At this point, you could say Dalen Terry
was a bad pick. Yeah, Dalen Terry is a bad pick, but, like, whatever. It's, like, a pick at that range usually is not going to be a great player anyway. Like, yeah. There were decent players there. But, like, it's, like... Yeah, so I also think that was bad, but it wasn't so bad. Like, not taking Halliburton, who was, like, drafted 12th, like... Again, like, I don't – a guy has picked 8 picks after your pick. Like, I don't think you look at that and say, like, oh, how could you? Like, 7 other teams also did the same thing, you know. Like, so the rest of the stuff they did wasn't so bad. Like, you know, Caruso was a good signing. DeMar was a good signing. Like, it wasn't so bad. Like, I'm not saying it was good. You know, like, letting Lowry go turned out to be really bad. You know, so – but but that one move hamstrung us so much. Like, if you didn't make that one move, like, if you could just erase Vooch and then add Franz Wagner, Jet Howard, and Wendell Carter onto this team, like, and everything else was the same, like, how much better would this team be, and how much better would you feel about it? You'd feel like a zillion times better about this team.
Doug, I would counter the 2020 top four. Patrick Williams at four was a massive still mistake. I'm going to just, like, right now, I'm going to name the guys after that. Yeah, you mentioned Halliburton at 12, sure. Devin Vassell's a much better player. Significantly.
He was also at 11, right?
At 11. Like, well, 11. How about Isaac Okoro? Yeah, so there isn't a GM in the league who would not prefer Isaac Okoro over Patrick Williams.
I would take Okoro, but I don't think that would be game-changing.
True, but he's still better. Okongwu?
Yeah, he's better. I'm not...
Okongwu better? Denny Avridge better? Like, every guy... Nah. Oh, yes, Okongwu's better. Like, every guy, with the exception of Killian Hayes, who's out of the league, basically, and Jalen Smith, you know... He's not better than those guys, right?
I don't think those guys, like, even today, like, I think maybe they're better. Like, I don't think they're meaningfully better. I wouldn't.
Okay. But they're better.
I guess all I'm saying is.
Yeah, you'd be better.
I guess what I'm saying is it's like, fine. Like, I'm not saying Pat Williams was a single. You know, maybe he's like a sacrifice fly or something. Bunt, advance the runner. Like, whatever. It's like, same with Terry. Like, I don't think those were like misses where I'm like, oh, God, that was so bad. It wasn't like Darko Milicic. Or something instead of, you know, Carmelo Anthony and Dwayne Wade. Like, it wasn't one of those types of things, right? Like, and the Vooch trade was. Like, the Vooch trade was like, you'd rather have Wendell Carter straight up, and then if you also had Franz Wagner, like, you'd have two starting players instead of the worst center in the league. Like, that would be dramatically better, and those guys would also be really young and help your team. Like, I'm not saying that would solve all our problems or the Bulls would be on path for a title with any of this stuff. Like, I don't think they would be. But you would sure feel a whole ton better, which is that one thing gone. Like, that, if you could undo that trade, and then ignoring the trade, also the extension. Like you just pointed out, just as bad. Like, you doubled down on this move that was so bad. Because, I don't know if you just wanted to save face, but, like, if you just had $20 million in room and you could have just used the mid-level exception to bring in a center like Hartenstein, like, that would be better. You know, so I think it's just like, you know, Their view of him is, like, so bizarrely weird relative to reality. And the way they cater to him and, like, all this other stuff. Like, it's just, like, that one thing is just, like, such a huge thing to get over. You know, like, I agree, like, all the other moves they've made. Like, I'm not saying they've all worked out. But, like, I could at least understand in theory why they made any of them, you know, at the time. And this one, except Dalen Terry. Dalen Terry is another one. I'm like, I don't know what you were thinking then. That made no sense to me at the time, makes no sense to me now. So I don't know. Like, that one thing, and their double downing on it has just really been painful for the franchise.
It's going to be a massive wart on this front office no matter what happens going forward.
Worst in the league. They're the worst in the league. Like, I mean, they're... You know, like, I don't know, like, I don't know if there's anyone that could have destroyed your joy more than this franchise or than this front office. Because it's like, at least if you were really bad, you could just pin your hopes on a lottery pick. Like, we're not even going to be able to do that. Like, we're going to be pinning our hopes on, like, hoping a guy we draft at, like, 11th is a superstar.
Bothers me, Doug. I'm going to do one more here. So we talked about one issue with the team. I'm going to name top 10 teams in terms of ranking for another key stat. You ready for this?
All right. I'm ready for it.
The Thunder is number one in the league. The Celtics, two. The Clippers, three. The Timberwolves, four. The Suns, five. Pelicans, six. Lakers, seven. Bucks, eight. Pacers, nine. Warriors, 10. Mavs, 11. Nuggets, 12. Heat, 13. Hawks, 14. Kings, 15. Cavs, 16. That is the order from 1 to 16 of the teams in terms of what offensive statistic. Can you take a guess?
I'll go with 3-point percentage.
Ding, ding, ding. 100% correct. What you'll find is that out of all those teams, with the exception, I think all those teams will either be in the play-in or the play-in at worst. Most of them are some of the best teams in the league. And then you look at the bottom 10, the Wizards, the Grizzlies, in order. Wizards are worse, Grizzlies, Spurs, Pistons, Raptors, Blazers, Hornets, Rockets, Jazz, Magic, and Bulls. Only the Magic are going to be in the playoffs out of all those teams. There's almost a direct correlation between how good you shoot the three and whether or not you're going to be in the playoffs. We've known this for 3 years, 4 years now, and this front office continues to fall on their face. Carter has been a bust. What are some of the other moves they tried to do to address the poor three-point shooting? Everyone has just failed. Getting the coach in, it's just screaming, we need to do better here. And I don't know how you address that in the offseason. I don't think you can. Unless Ball comes back healthy, I guess.
Yeah, that look, I'm excited that Lonzo Ball looks like he is going to have a full personal recovery. And it looks like he'll probably is a stretch. But I feel like he could have a recovery that allows him to play in the NBA again. But to expect him to play in the NBA at the level he played in his first year back after a 2.5 year absence, that's just nuts. Like, it's just not going to happen. If it happens ever, it's not going to happen in year one. So, you know, like, I just don't think, like, look, I am absolutely rooting for Lonzo. You know, I really like him, and, you know, it sucks when some guy gets hurt. And I have not even a shred of ill will for him getting injured. And I love the fact that, whatever, he's gone through three surgeries and he's still fighting back. That's great. You know, and I hope, but you cannot pin any hopes on him. Like, you really can't. Like, you just can't, you know? So, yeah, and like I said, nothing. What you can do is stop trying to be ninth next year. That's what you can do. Yeah. I mean, there's different ways you could view blowing it up. But I think, like, part of it is, like, you got to get out of Vooch. You got to get out of DeMar. You know, you could maybe hang on to Zach for a little bit, hope he comes back healthy. I know people have mixed opinions on Zach, but I think Zach's going to come back and play hard. You know, and I think he'll come back and be a solid player. And then maybe once his value's up, you move on from him too. You know, the real question, I think, for the Bulls is, what do you do with Kobe and Io? Because you're not going to be good enough to take advantage of their cheap contracts. And I would explore the market on those guys. Because they're gonna be like $35 million guys. Like, people are like, oh, that's crazy. No, they're going to make like $35 million on their next deal if they keep playing this well. Because they're going to be like 24 years old and unrestricted free agents. And you look at guys who are 24 and like really good, like, you know, Fred VanVleet just got the max for putting up Kobe White-like numbers and is much older. Like, someone is going to pay these guys.
That's a great question. Let's kind of finish with this as we take the bus in. Let's say that that's a decision that they decide to make. And I agree with you. There's tremendous value, especially for teams that are on the edge of contention, to bring in a Kobe White or Io, especially if you're having issues in the backcourt. Because they have relatively low salaries, but they're very good players and they're signed for multiple years. So if you're a team that's like on the edge of the cap or in dangerous range, those are guys that you want to bring in. Which one of those two would you move? And which one do you think you'd get more for?
I feel like you'd get more for Io, and I would also want to move Kobe. Yeah.
So I'm the exact opposite on both those assertions.
You want to keep Kobe and move Io?
I think you'd get more for Kobe. And I prefer to move Io. Io's a better defensive player, but I don't think he's in the same league as Kobe offensively. I think Kobe's significantly
I think that's true. Better. I think the types of teams that would make that trade are looking for a two-way guy who's not a high-volume guy.
And that would
like,
be Io.
I don't think that's why I said I think you get more for Io. Yeah, that's what I said. I think you get more
okay.
for Io.
Oh yeah, I see what you're saying. Okay.
And I think I'd rather keep Io as well and move Kobe. Because I don't think Kobe is good enough as a high volume option to lead you anywhere, which is also why I think it'd be dicey. I mean, the thing is with both those guys is it's like it's so painful to trade them because if you're just going to get one first round pick for them, like that's not really moving the needle for you in an improvement state. And then I think you're better off maybe keeping them. But that's why the Bulls are in such a tough spot, right? Like I'm not like, oh, you should trade these guys, but you should definitely like look at the market for everyone. Like you have to go into this offseason going like, you know what? We need to do something different. What is the best thing we can do? And you have to be open to the idea of like, I want to be good in 2 years, not next year. Like that has to be a, and it, but if you do that plan, like you have to have an approach that's not just like, I want to win 10 games and then magically I'll be better. Like, I'm not saying the Bulls should tank. I don't think they should tank, but I'm saying you do have to look at like, what is going to help me in the long run? How do I align some assets to be better in the long run? You know, like what moves help me more? Is there ways I can give up something, you know, this year that helps me in the future? And now that's going to be really hard. Like, I've been on that bandwagon for a couple of years now. It was a really easy thing to do 2 years ago. That's going to be really hard now. That's why I said, I think this team is just, it's just in really tough shape. It's going to be really hard to rebuild, and it's going to be impossible to, like, you know, I guess retool in a way that's successful. I think it's just a tough spot. It's just a tough spot.
I think what we got to hope for is a team like the Lakers, who are on the, you know, the play-in in a very competitive West, have a disastrous play-in run. Or a team like the Golden State Warriors, or a team that's just like, you know, kind of on the edge with resources, who are willing to pay a lot to bring in Zach LaVine and, you know, yeah, make that risk.
I just don't think those teams are going to do that.
What's that?
I just don't think those teams will do that. I think those teams are just going to be like, I'm in the blow it up phase now.
Like, I don't think the Lakers will not do that with LeBron on the roster. That's not going to
happen. I think they might just not keep LeBron on the roster then. I don't know. Like, yeah, who knows? Like, God, if I ran the Lakers, I would not be sending away multiple future first round picks to try and juice the last year of LeBron James.
Well, of course, career. You're not going to get that for Zach, but you could possibly, I don't know, maybe get Rui.
Like, if I'm the Lakers, like, do I think Zach is better than D'Angelo Russell?
That's a great point. I think Russell's kind of played his way into that territory. Okay, I don't know if I'd make that move, but I think if they go out poorly and Russell plays poorly, I think you're going to have LeBron walking into the front office along with, you know, his management team saying, hey, we need to get Zach LaVine for Russell. That's got to be your hope, is some kind of first round disaster like that yields a team
regardless of what we've talked about that could happen. I think what we should be doing is looking for whatever opportunities that come in, right? Like, I mean, like if those chances are available, it's fine. If not, it's fine. Like, I mean, you just got to evaluate everything. So if it's Zach, move Zach. If it's DeMar in a sign and trade, move DeMar. If you can find a way to get rid of Vooch without paying something, do it. If someone wants to give you like a ton of assets for one of Io or Kobe that could help you in a couple years, then you look at that. I think you just have to have all options open. Like, you can't think like, oh, I'm just going to move Zach. Like, you're at this point where it's just really bad for you, and you just need to find moves that make it better. And you can't be picky about what those moves are and say, like, I'm only going to be aiming at doing this with Zach or this with DeMar, this with whoever. Like, you need to go in all options on the table and take whatever ones you think give you the better future. And you need to aim for, like, 2 years, not for next year, because you're definitely just not going to be good next year. So maybe it's even 3 years you have to aim for. But, like, you got to start looking a little bit more long-term. And, you know, maybe for these guys, one of the problems is, like, I don't know if this front office will survive. Like, if they miss the playoffs again this year and they miss next year, like, you make it 1 in 5 years while desperately trying to win, like, they might not make it.
Well, I'm telling you right now, if I'm Reinsdorf,
also stop them.
If I'm Reinsdorf and they miss the playoffs this year again, another play-in, one and out, let's say it's worse. You know, last year at least they won the first play-in game. Right now there's a possibility they could be 9 or 10, but let's just assume, let's pretend they lose that game to Atlanta. Doesn't that conversation have to be had? Hey, guys, you gave it a great effort, but we have very few assets looking forward. It was a massive mistake to sign Vooch to another year. We're going to pass, you know, take your ball and go home. We're going to look at it in a different direction. I think there's a possibility
for
that. I don't think they'll do it.
I hope so.
Yeah, I hope
so. Hard to say. I hope so, but it's like, we'll see. I mean, like, I think, I forget, maybe it was Ricky O'Donnell or Bulls blogger. It's one of these guys who's maybe, you know, historically negative, who pointed this out, I think. I want to say it was Ricky, but it said, like, you know, when you look at the past guys that have held the general manager seat, and they held it for a long time, even when things went bad for a while. And, you know, he thought Pax was really bad for a while, which I disagree with, but doesn't matter. Is that they all had like deep ties to Jerry Reinsdorf prior to holding the seat. You know, Jerry Krause was buddies as like a baseball scout and all this other stuff. And then he won all these titles and built up all this goodwill and blah, 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 blah. And John Paxson like won a championship with, you know, like with a shot and
was an announcer, you know, was a coach on the 96 yeah, win team. Yes, exactly. All yeah. around the
and,
program.
And our, you know, Acme, they have no ties to this team really historically. And also you have Michael Reinsdorf calling the shots now. And so, you know, some of that longevity that has existed in the past, like the reasons that existed don't necessarily still apply here. It doesn't mean they're going to pull the trigger quickly. I'm sure Michael, you know, whatever, will take lessons from his dad, good or bad. So we don't know exactly how it's going to go. But there's reason to hope that they may be, you know, a little bit more willing to pull the trigger than Jerry Reinsdorf was and the couple guys. You know, they took a long time to let go.
Well, we should take some solace in that. That's a good point. As we bring the big red bus in. Hey, just an announcement to everyone. Please email me at credfred@gmail.com, credfred@gmail.com, with your questions for our next show, which will be our first annual mailbag show. And if we don't get enough questions, we'll just answer the ones for other people's mailbags. What say you, Doug? Sounds like a good plan. And then also, you remember the icon images? I got another one that I'll highlight that we're going to randomly give away to anyone who sends in a question. So send in your question. We're going to do a random giveaway to one of those iconic Bulls images, Taj dunking. I don't know what this one will be. I'll have to see what pictures I still have in my collection. I'm going to give one of those away. As a thank you to all you listeners, please give us positive reviews on the platform you're listening to. I don't know exactly what it does, but it seems like everybody tells us to ask to do that. And until next time, let's go Bulls, my friend.
Go Bulls.
All right, DT. Take it easy, brother.